Yeah, 7-11.
Magistrate Court of Ada County for the State of Idaho will be in order. The Honorable Judge Dean presiding.
Thank you. Feel free to have a seat. Members of the jury, thank you for being here today. We appreciate your time and your attendance today. I'll thank you again at various points throughout the course of the trial, but we can't do this without your presence here today, so thank you. This is the case State of Idaho versus Avalon Hardy, case number CR01-22-20001. We have Mr. Beltran here on behalf of the state, and we have Mr. Black here representing Ms. Hardy. Are the parties starting the state prepared to proceed? Mr. Beltran?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Black?
Yes, Judge.
Thank you. So members of the jury, in just a moment, our clerk will call the roll of the jury. When your name is called, you'll also be identified with a number, and you should be holding a plastic, some type of plastic. I see it there. Thank you very much. It's red today. I never know the color. I'm going to see when people come here. But a number there. I'm going to ask that you, when you're called, you'll be identified with a number. You remember those numbers as well, because you'll be using those later in the jury selection process. You may be identified by number. When we call your name, I'm going to ask if you'll please answer out loud, saying here, yes, something to that effect. We're recording everything. We don't have a transcriptionist in here, so we need to answer out loud. And oftentimes we nod. We're used to doing that, nodding yes. But we need actually an oral statement so we know someone is present. So if you can say here or yes, I would appreciate that. I'll ask Ms. Posey if she will now call the roll of our jury.
Juror number one, Alana Beck.
Here.
Juror number two, Kyle Wooten.
Here.
Juror number three failed to appear. Juror number four, Samuel Fornero.
Here.
Juror number five, Jan Giltner.
Here.
Juror number six, Lorraine Thompson.
Here.
Juror number seven, Esteban Telleria.
Here.
Juror number eight, Maxwell Claude.
Here.
Juror number nine, Amber Taverner.
Here.
Juror number 10, Luke Carey.
Here.
Juror number 11, David Poppleton.
Here.
Juror number 12, Pavel.
Here.
Can you say your last name for me?
Kasema.
Juror number 13, Eric Taylor.
Here.
Juror number 14, Lindsay Morrison.
Here.
Juror number 15, Cameron Gitson.
Gitson? Gitson,
yeah. Juror number 16, David Parker.
Here.
Juror number 17 failed to appear, and juror number 18 failed to appear. Juror number 19, Paul Gibbs.
Here.
Juror number 20, Carl Sloth.
Here.
Juror number 21, John Aglubot?
Yeah, here.
Juror number 22, Sarah Means?
Yes.
Juror number 23, Valerie Holcomb?
Yeah.
And juror number 24, Denise Crawford?
Yes.
Thank you
very much. Members of the jury, if we mispronounce your name at any time, please correct us. My last name is Dean. No one gets my name wrong. I mispronounce a lot of names. And so I'd appreciate any help so that we call you by the proper name today. So I'll ask your assistance, and I'm always grateful for Ms. Posey calling the names first so that I can learn the names a little better there. You've all been summoned as prospective jurors in the lawsuit now before us. The first thing we do in a trial is to select jurors from among you. We'll be selecting six with one alternate today. My name is Michael Dean. I'll be the judge in charge of the courtroom and this trial. The deputy clerk of the court you just met, and that's Ms. Lisa Posey. She marks the trial exhibits, and she administers the oaths to you as jurors and to the witnesses. We have two bailiffs assisting us with trial today. Their names are David Baish and Myron Rankins, and we appreciate their assistance as always. They'll assist in maintaining courtroom order, working with the jury, and help you in many ways today. If any of you have any issues, questions, or comments throughout the course of this, please alert the bailiff, and they can assist us or get word to me. Each one of you is qualified to serve as a juror of this court. This call upon your time does not come frequently, but it's part of your obligation for citizenship in this state and country. No one should avoid fulfilling this obligation except under the most pressing of circumstances. Service on a jury is a civic and a patriotic obligation which all good citizens should perform. Service on a jury affords you, as potential jurors, an opportunity to be part of the judicial process by which the legal affairs and liberties of your fellow men and women are determined and protected under our form of government. You're being asked to perform one of the highest duties of citizenship, that is, to sit in judgment on facts which will determine the guilt or innocence of persons charged with a crime. To assist you in the process of selection of a jury, I'll introduce you to the parties, their lawyers, and tell you in summary what this action is about. When I introduce an individual, would you please stand and face the jury panel? The state of Idaho is the plaintiff in this action. The lawyer representing the state is Mr. Juan Beltran, Deputy Ada County Prosecutor.
Morning.
The defendant in this action is Ms. Avalon Hardy.
Good morning.
Ms. Hardy is represented by her attorney, Mr. Ryan Black.
Morning.
In a moment, I'll read to you the pertinent portion of the complaint which sets forth the charge against Ms. Hardy. The complaint is not to be considered as evidence, but as a mere formal charge against Ms. Hardy. You must not consider it as evidence of her guilt, and you must not be influenced by the fact that a charge has been filed. The complaint alleges that Avalon Shantae Hardy, on or about the 28th day of June 2022 in the county of Ada, state of Idaho, did actually intentionally and unlawfully touch or strike the person of Michael Kish against his will by shoving him and or pushing him aside and or chest bumping him. To these charges, Ms. Hardy entered a plea of not guilty. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the course of the trial. The defendant is never required to prove her innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. As the judge in charge of this courtroom, it's my duty at various times during the course of the trial to instruct you as to the law that applies to this case. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts, to apply the law set forth in the instructions I give you to those facts, and in this way to decide the case. In applying the court's instructions into the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you're instructed that you are not to discuss the case amongst yourselves or with anyone else, nor to form any opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. You'll hear me say that multiple times throughout the course of the trial, and I'll give reminders of that. The initial jurors we brought in, we've all selected, you're seated in order. And so in this part of the jury selection, as we start, you'll be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold, or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain six persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand the questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your affairs, for personal reasons, for any type of embarrassment, but it's only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Each question has an important bearing upon your qualifications as a juror, and each question is based upon a requirement of the law with respect to such qualifications. Each question is asked each of you as though each of you are being questioned separately. If your answer to any question is yes, I'm going to ask that you please raise your hand. You'll then be asked to identify yourself by your name and juror number. And it's important that we identify ourselves in some way. As I said, we're being recorded, and oftentimes it's easy to jump into an answer, but I'm going to ask that the attorneys assist in this and that we actually identify by number or by name or both so we know who we're speaking to and have that recorded. At this time, I'll instruct both sides to avoid repeating any question during the voir dire process which has already been asked. Counsel is welcome, however, to ask follow-up questions of any individual juror based on the juror's response to any previous question. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has a certain number of peremptory challenges. You may have heard that term before. By that, I mean each side can challenge a juror and ask that he or she be excused without giving a reason for the request. In addition, each side has challenges for cause, by which I mean that each side can ask that a juror be excused, but must give a specific reason for the request. If you're excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity is being questioned. It is not. What we'll do now is I'll ask the Madam Clerk to swear in the jury, so I'll ask everyone in the jury panel, if you'll please stand and raise your right hand.
Do each of you swear that you will answer the questions as may be asked of you by or under the direction of the court, touching upon your qualifications to sit as trial jurors in this case? So help you God. Thank you.
Thank you. Feel free to have a seat. And I noted we had all our jurors standing and taking the oath. Is there anyone who did not take the oath? Not seeing any responses, thank you. So once again, I'll remind one thing I said briefly before, but during the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you're instructed that you're not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including any use of email, text messaging, tweeting, blogging, electronic bulletin boards, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your final determination. As I mentioned, we'll begin our jury selection process, also known as voir dire, momentarily. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law. In old French, it simply means to speak the truth. The court will go first, following my questions to you. Mr. Beltran will go, and then Mr. Black will go. I've asked the parties if they can. We'll try and keep it within a 30-minute time frame, but if we need more time, we may address that and expand upon that as well. Now, my first question to you that I'll give, I'll ask this. If you're not called upon by any party, but you have an answer and you've raised your hand, please just raise your hand. Someone should call upon you. If they're talking to someone else, remember your answer. You may be called upon at a later time. Each one of you filled out a questionnaire in advance. And I know that because I was on jury duty in December. And so I filled out the same questionnaire not long ago. Is there anyone here whose answers to that jury questionnaire have changed since you filled it out? And I don't see any hands. You'll hear me say that. If I don't see any hands, I'm just going to acknowledge that for the record. I don't see anyone's hands being raised. I anticipate the case today will be a one-day trial. So we'll start today and we'll finish. We may go into the evening hours if need be, but based on the information the attorneys have given me, I foresee that we'll finish this case at some point today. Is there anyone, if you're required to serve as a juror, in this case for a period of today, even if it goes into the evening, that service would create such a hardship upon you or your family or business or profession that would prevent you from rendering your service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? We have one person, juror number seven, Mr. Telleria. Did I say your last name right?
Telleria,
I am sorry. Thank you for the correction. Tell me what your answer is.
I own a small business in Ada County here, and I am the sole breadwinner for the business. I go out and do presentations at people's houses, and I'm the only one that knows how to do this part of the job that brings in income. And we have several appointments scheduled for today. They will have to either be rescheduled, or the people will become upset or what have you, and they won't reschedule. We could possibly lose that money. And we employ several employees and subcontractors that rely on me doing my part of the job.
Now, a few questions. Anything else you want to tell me before I ask you a few follow-up questions?
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay. I'll give some breaks today, so there'd be time to make some phone calls to reschedule and otherwise. Would that assist in that, if you're able to get in touch in advance of those appointments?
I could do that, yes.
Would, if you were, and I don't know who will be selected to serve on the jury yet, but if you were selected to serve on the jury, would that be those appointments or missing would be weighing on your mind to a degree that you wouldn't be able to give both Ms. Hardy and the state your attention or listen to their witnesses?
No.
Okay. So you'd be able to base your ruling on what's happening today and only today without that causing you some type of concern prejudicing either party?
Correct.
Okay. I appreciate your candor. Thank you for that. I think I saw Mr. Claude?
Yeah.
Did I say your name right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Same question. You're number eight. Same question to you.
So I work for a smaller car dealership, used car dealership in Boise. I'm a finance manager for them, and I'm the only one in that store. We have four employees that knows how to do that job. It's very computer-based, and so I can sign a bunch of legal paperwork with customers when they're purchasing a vehicle. So as of right now, it's just salesman and a used car manager over there that have to push customers back throughout the day as long as I'm not there.
My question would be similar to Mr. Tellaria, if I said it right that time. I'll take a break. There will be some breaks throughout the course of the day where you could make phone calls to give some instructions or let people know where you are. Would that assist in that process, in your concerns?
I mean, not very much, just based on the sense. For my salesman to do his job, he has to get paid by me doing his job. So I'm putting his day-to-day life at a hold, Okay. Essentially, by me nothing.
So you're putting someone else's...
Yeah.
Okay. Jury service is always important. I know there's always sacrifices that every juror makes to be here today. It's an important thing. The question I have for you then is, if you were selected, if you're one of the jurors that's on our jury, would that be weighing on your mind to such a degree that you could not listen to the witnesses or be fair to Ms. Hardy or to the state?
I don't think I'd be a fair. I think there's a better option. I don't think I'd be a fair enough juror.
And when you say you don't think you'd be fair, why not?
I don't think I'd be able to give a full, honest, I mean, clear answer. I think it's weighing on me too much that I'm not there. I guess I'm too worried about work that I wouldn't be able to give a fair decision.
Okay. Thank you. Does either side have an objection to excusing Mr. Claude?
Oh, no objection from the state, Your Honor.
None from me.
Hey, Mr. Claude, I appreciate your responses. I'm going to excuse you based on your answer then. What I need you to do is take your number and check back in with the jury commissioner's office. Thank you. Did I miss anyone on the back row? I'll come back and make sure. Any other? Okay. I think I saw Ms. Thompson, number six.
Right.
Thank you. I apologize for not seeing your hand before.
I had difficulty getting here this morning due to the darkness. I mean, you said this could run into the evening. I'm filled with anxiety due to vision. I ended up on a one-way road getting here because I didn't see well enough.
Okay. Thank you. And I say that as a precaution. We may finish early. It could finish in the mid-afternoon. Earlier. We could go in the evening. It depends somewhat on how the evidence progresses and also the time the jury needs to fully deliberate the matter. So that we could be leaving after it's already gotten dark. You said that causes you some anxiety or trepidation?
Yes, because I can't see well enough to read the directions, the sign directions.
Okay. If we're going later, would that be weighing in your mind that you're starting to get anxious and
yes.
Unable to be fair?
I'm afraid it would.
Would you be comfortable... maybe one of these golden rule type questions, would you be comfortable with you serving as a juror if you knew that was in your mind?
Right.
Let me ask
other
you.
Other than the visual issue, I don't have a problem with being a juror.
Okay. Is there any assistance that you have, family or anyone that would be able to assist you with that today?
I'm not sure if anyone's available, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
But I can try.
Okay. Well, let me ask, would you be able to base your decision based on the evidence here today?
Oh, yeah.
Would that anxiety cause you to rush through a deliberation if you were a potential juror to try and leave early?
I'll try not to. I'll behave.
But I believe you when you say that. I just want to make sure that, one, you'd be able to be a fair juror, or if that would cause you such anxiety, you're thinking, I don't think I could be fair. I'd be trying to rush this.
No, I don't. I think I'd be fair.
I'll let the jury follow up with both of them in the front row who've asked some additional questions, but I'll leave you for the time being. Thank you. Thank you for your response. Did I miss anyone in the back? I gave a summary of the charge made in the complaint against Ms. Hardy. Other than what I have told you, do any of you right now know anything else about this case, either through your own personal knowledge, by discussion with anyone else, or from radio, television, or newspapers? And I don't see any responses. I will note, after conversations with the attorneys, this stems from late June from some different gatherings that took place. This takes place at some gatherings that took place near the Capitol building after a recent Supreme Court decision, and was contained in the Boise Weekly as well as KTVB. There was coverage of rallies or gatherings taking place near the Capitol building. Was there anyone who read or remembers those articles? Let me start in the front here. I'll work my way back. I think I saw Mr. Fornero.
Yes.
Did I say your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. What do you know about this or those? No, I believe it's in relation to a different one.
Okay.
No. But you've read about those gatherings. Okay. Do you recall any others?
Not
okay. And I'll let the attorneys ask some follow-up questions if they'd like. Mr. I think it was Mr. Parker, am I correct?
Correct.
Same question to you.
Are you referring to Roe versus Wade?
I was, yes. In relation to some gatherings related to that. Did you read about those articles? Did you read anything that you would recognize as related to this case?
Can't believe, no, sir.
Okay. Is there anything about your? Okay. Is there anybody else? Thank you for that. I'll let the attorneys ask some follow-up questions on that. But is there anyone else who read articles related to the Supreme Court's decision related to Roe versus Wade in newspaper articles or online media as it related to what gatherings here in Boise? And I see Ms. Thompson, number 6. What information did you read?
Just the general, that there was a gathering, a protest, some arguing, that's it.
Okay.
I basically skimmed the article.
Is there anything about what you read in your recollection that would cause you hesitancy about serving as a juror today?
No.
Anyone else in the first two rows here? Anyone in the back two rows? Well, there may be some follow-up questions for the attorneys. This was these gatherings were covered in the news, and I'll allow the attorneys to ask some questions about those to see if anyone remembers anything further in relation to that. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to Ms. Hardy, or do any of you know her from any business or social relationship? And I don't see any responses. Does the relationship of guardian and ward, employer and employee, creditor, debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger exist between any of you and Ms. Hardy? I don't see any responses. Usually if I see a response to the first one, it makes sense I'd see it in that next one, but I don't see any response to that one either. Are any of you a party to any civil action against Ms. Hardy? I'll note that I don't see any responses there as well. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against Ms. Hardy or been accused by Ms. Hardy in any criminal prosecution? And I don't see any responses there. Do any of you have any bias or prejudice either for or against Ms. Hardy? And I'll note no responses. One last question there. Have any of you formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that Ms. Hardy is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged today? And I don't know, I'll note no responses there. I've introduced you briefly a few moments ago to the attorneys representing the parties. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers, or do any of you know the lawyers from any professional, business, or social relationship? I think I saw someone start to raise a hand, but they were not a hand raised, is that correct? Okay, no responses there. How many people here have sat on a jury before, by show of hands? Okay, we have two in back. I think, if I'm counting right, Mr. Poppleton?
Yes, sir.
Correct, number 11. What type of jury?
It was an attempted murder trial.
How long ago?
13 years.
Here in Ada County or elsewhere?
Elsewhere.
Is there anything in that case that happened that would affect your ability to sit as an impartial juror in this case?
Pretty stressful.
Okay. When you say stressful or unrelated, was there something that, I just want to make sure there's no concern you'd have listening to evidence and ruling only on the evidence you hear today?
No.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I think we saw Ms. Morrison, number 14, is that correct? What type of case, Ms. Morrison?
I was a grand juror for the state of Idaho 8 years ago, or a year, and then I was also a juror in Salt Lake City 4 years ago.
Are there any concerns you have from your prior jury experience in sitting as a juror in this case? Anything that would impact your ability to listen to the witnesses and judge this case based on what you hear today only? Thank you. And I think you said, no, you might be a faint of voice. I have the benefit of a microphone. But I think you, thank you for that. Anyone in the back that's been a juror in the past? Is there anyone here who's related to or friends with any law enforcement officer? And I see one name in front, Mr. Wooten, number two. May I ask who?
I've got a half-brother in Alaska who's out of patrol.
Okay. Do you talk about cases with one another?
No.
Is there anything about your relationship with your half-brother that would cause you concern today?
No, sir.
And would that cause you to favor the side of a law enforcement witness over the testimony of someone else?
It would not.
Thank you for that. Anyone else? Is it Mr. Sloth?
Yeah.
Okay, number 20.
Not a direct friendship or association, but I played on softball teams with a couple of police officers. I don't know if that's applicable to what you're...
Okay. How recent?
The time that was years ago.
Years ago?
Yeah.
Do you have any concerns, given your relationship with those officers, hearing officers testify today?
No.
Would that relationship cause you to give greater weight to a law enforcement officer testifying today over another witness? Thank you. Mr. Parker, number 16.
Yeah, my wife is currently a parole commissioner for the state of Idaho. And I don't know if this is a time to mention, but she worked for the prosecutor's office for 32 years. And so I'm pro-prosecution.
Okay. And is that the Ada County Prosecuting Attorney's Office you work for? Okay. Obviously, Mr. Beltran works for their office. Do you know Mr. Beltran?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you know if your wife knows him?
There's a good chance.
Okay. How recently was she a member of their office?
Not to brag, but there's a room named after her here at the courthouse.
She worked with victims and witnesses, is that correct?
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay. I recognize the last name. Thank you. Let me ask you, you said you're pro-prosecution, so you right now as we start, it seems like you err on the side of the state.
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe you have the ability, or do you have the ability to be fair and impartial considering that?
I don't think we would all be here and, in this setting if they didn't have really good evidence and a reason for being here, because they don't know how to clear out certain cases.
Well, let me stop and say this. Ms. Hardy is presumed to be innocent, and she retains that presumption of innocence throughout the course of the trial. It's the state's obligation to prove her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and quite frankly, I have not heard the evidence yet. I'll be hearing it for the first time. And so it sounds like you'd right at this point be erring on the side of the state. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I'm inclined to excuse Mr. Parker. Is there any objection starting with the state?
No objection, Your Honor.
None.
Mr. Parker, I appreciate you bringing that up. I think this was the right time to bring that up. So you are welcome to be excused, and I'll have you return to the jury commissioner's office. Thank you. Is there anyone else who's friends or family or knows any law enforcement officer through a social relationship? And we have Mr. Fornero.
Yes.
And number four. Who do you know?
I do IT work for iTrade, and the company I work for does IT support for a handful of police departments like the City of Ontario. So do a lot of stuff with the police there directly, and then City of Idaho City is another one. We have a handful of others, legal offices, that kind of thing. We just do IT for all of that. So on the backside of, like I said, direct relationship of on your own IT support.
So purely professional relationship then?
More or less, yeah. But I mean, in there, going to the, in the police department in the area, like Ada County has their own. Department. I'm doing what those guys do for you for for those other locations. So.
Is there any concern you have about your service or professionally with them that would cause you to give greater weight to a law enforcement officer's testimony?
Probably, yeah. Kind of the mindset of, you know, being on that side of, you know, people getting arrested and coming in and seeing that kind of stuff. Like, generally, if somebody gets arrested, like, there's a reason for it, you know. Yeah, it's not to say that the defendant is innocent or was, you know, unjustly arrested or anything like that, but I would kind of sit on that side of the fence here. If you screw up bad enough to actually get arrested, there was probably a reason for it.
Well, let me say this. Not every case that comes before us was there an arrest made. Some cases arrest, some cases are brought before us in a separate fashion. And so we won't know some of the details until we hear the evidence in this particular case. Ms. Hardy, as I said before, is presumed to be innocent. And as she sits here before you right now, is innocent. There's been no evidence yet presented against her. Knowing that, my question is, right now, do you have a state of mind towards one side or the other that you think would keep you from being impartial?
Just in general, I kind of feel if you get in trouble enough to go to court, you probably deserve it.
Okay. Thank you for your candor to the court. I'm going to excuse Mr. Mr. Fornero, unless there's any objection from the parties. Happy to hear from them.
No objection, Your Honor.
None from me.
Thank you. Mr. Fornero, thank you. And we're for your excuse to go to the trial court administrator's office. Ms. Giltner, did I say your name correctly? Number five.
I retired from the Department of Corrections, so I know names and stuff like that, but other than that, I've been gone for 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Same question. You know some people in the law enforcement side. Is there anything there that would cause you to favor one side over the other? Okay. Do you think you could be a fair and impartial juror?
I think so.
Thank you very much. I think I touched upon all the hands I saw raised. I'm now going to read to you the names of those persons who may possibly testify in this case. I'll read their names slowly and ask if you know them in any capacity. If you do, I'll ask you to please raise your hand. First, Michael Kish of the Idaho State Police. I don't see anyone raising their hands there. And second, Hans Snyder. And I don't see any response there either. Are there any of you who are unwilling to follow my instructions to you, the jury, as to the law you must apply in determining this case? No responses there. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict? And we have one person back, I believe, Mr. Gibbs, am I correct?
Yeah.
Number 19. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I've been studying the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses and learned a lot. So, kind of on a neutral stand.
Okay.
So, like.
Tell me what that means when you say on a neutral
stand. Like, if it was for a murder case, I wouldn't want to be involved because I'm not a judge. Like, I'm not against the state or anything, like, not communist or anything like that, but just...
Let me ask you this question. You're going to hear evidence today from witnesses, right. And you'll have to make some determinations based on those witnesses, witness. Could you make a determination and say not guilty or guilty based on what you hear today?
Right, but not only that, I struggle with high blood pressure, anxiety, and I have severe ADD, so if you see me looking off a lot, it's because like, my attention deficit.
Would you be able to pay attention to the witnesses throughout the course of the day, knowing that we may be stretched out for multiple hours?
Probably could for a moment, but retain everything, like I don't really get all the info because I tend to feel.
Okay. So you're in essence saying you might have some difficulty retaining what you hear and paying attention. Okay. Any objection from the state to excusing Mr. Gibbs?
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Bland?
None, Judge.
And Mr. Gibbs, thank you. You're welcome to be excused then. And a good check-in with the trial court administrator's office. Is there anyone else who had a religious or moral position that would prohibit you from sitting in judgment? Are there any of you, if selected as a juror in this case, who's unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as instructed by the court? And I don't see any responses there. My last question then will be, do any of you have any other reason why you cannot give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? Mr. Carey, you started to raise your hand and kind of put it back down, and so I see that. I want to find out what's going through your mind.
I got really bad restless leg syndrome, so I'm just going to be over here dancing.
Okay. Do you need to stand up right now?
I have been.
Okay. If you need to stand, I'm going to let you stand. You're in the back row. You're not blocking anyone. I have some relatives that suffer from that as well. So you're welcome to move around. Your legs move around as you need. The only thing that if we make noise, I might need to say something. But if you need to stand up during this selection, I'm going to let you do that. Throughout the course of the trial, we'll take some breaks too. Would that be of assistance if you are on the jury? Okay. Thank you. Would that cause you anything else, an inability to be fair or impartial? Thank you for your response there. And I don't see any other responses at this time. What I'm going to do is ask the attorneys to conduct their questions of those jurors. They may, sometimes when we have people in separate sections like this, the questions are primarily addressed to this portion of the jury up here. I often say sometimes they're in harm's way, more likely of being on the jury than those in back, but we've had some people excused, so if the attorneys are welcome to ask their questions to either group or both. If the questions are primarily directed to those in the two boxes, I'd ask those in the back to please remember those questions. You may be called upon to answer them, but the attorneys may address you specifically, and they're welcome to do so too. Having said that, Mr. Black, is the state prepared to give its to conduct its voir dire examination?
The state is, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you're welcome to go ahead. I am going to allow both parties to enter the well. The well is this area right here, so they can see you a little bit better. That way they don't have to have their backs turned to you, but they can see all the parties. So, Mr. Beltran, you're welcome to go. I've asked the parties to try and restrict to 30 minutes, although we'll have discussions if we need more. So if I give a reminder to 5 minutes before that's over, it's not for me saying anything about them other than I'm just saying, we're almost there. Do you need more time? And so that's why I do that. Mr. Beltran.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As the judge mentioned, my name is Juan Beltran. I'm the deputy prosecutor for Ada County. So my goal this morning, and Mr. Black agreed with me, is to be preparing for the jury who can render a verdict in this decision to identify any type of bias. I'd like to start off, and I usually get a lot of hands raised when I ask this question. Who here has been pulled over by law? So I'm just going to ground this away. So if you raise your hand, you know, without going into any type of detail, you know, what was that interaction with law enforcement?
Finding Mr. Gilroy changing my manual car, and I was going through a stoplight and didn't catch my gear, and he pulled up over to the college town. He was just checking to see if I was probably see if I was drunk, and he knew I wasn't, so I was in an old car, and he just said, you know, be careful and get me.
Okay. Would you say that interaction with law enforcement, was it a negative or positive experience?
It was just an experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
So nothing about that would kind of lead you to think or has there any type of bias for the law enforcement officer who would testify today? Okay. Mr. Wu-Chen? You mentioned that you have a half-brother that works in law enforcement.
Okay. I should also mention, in Central America, my parents spent a year on the local fire department / police force. So that was not something I thought about, but answers stay the same in the previous questions.
Thank you very much.
So moving on from that, aside from the context of family, have you had any, you have experience with prior law enforcement in your everyday life?
Right.
Briefly describe what that interaction was like.
Got a speeding ticket in high school.
Okay.
I was not in Idaho though. Actually got one in college as well, but none recently. Other than that, the only professional interaction I've had with police recently was when I got questioned about witnessing an assault in upstate New York in Syracuse. This was, I guess, 2017 or so.
Okay. So anything about those interactions would kind of have you a bias to favor, not favor law enforcement would be testifying today?
No.
Okay. A show of hands to that question of who, you know, was pulled over at officer. Okay, so I'll go ahead and continue with the first row. Ms. Gilkner? Yes. You stated you work for Sorcerer Department of Corrections.
Uh-huh.
So you interact a lot with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
In your professional life, would those interactions cause you to render a biased decision favorable towards law enforcement if you testifying today, possibly?
Oh, probably not, no.
Okay. And then outside of your professional life, interactions with law enforcement, how were those like?
Well, I got the ticket, but it was okay. They were okay.
Okay, so nothing negative about that?
No.
Except the ticket. Okay. So kind of going off on the topic of law enforcement, as Your Honor mentioned, law enforcement is the witness for the state. A show of hands, can anyone describe to me, you know, what the basic duties of law enforcement are? Or I'll just select Mr. Poppleton. What do you believe are the duties of law enforcement?
On the car, it says to serve and protect, so to save and protect.
Okay. Does anyone else agree with that statement? To serve and protect is the duty of law enforcement. Does anyone, would anyone have a different answer as to the duties of law enforcement being to serve and protect? Yes.
Isn't it more specifically to uphold the law?
To uphold the law.
And let me just note, this is Mr. Wooten speaking, so we know number two. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Beltran.
I apologize, Your Honor, for not reciting it. To uphold the law, could you say then that if a law is broken, then action has to be taken?
I guess so.
Or would you say there's discretion depending on the law that's broken?
I'd say that's probably written in the code somewhere.
That discretion is written in the code?
If discretion is allowed, I think it would be written. If there's a specific consequence or action to be taken, it's probably written there too.
Would anyone agree with that statement? Would anyone agree that if there's a certain law that's been violated, then certain action has to be taken by law enforcement, by show of hands? And then kind of contrary to that, does anyone believe that law enforcement is given certain discretion to not perform an action once a law has been violated? Would anyone believe that? Okay.
I mean, how many of us have gotten a warning on a ticket, right?
Yes, that is true. That is true.
Let me just make that was Mr. Wooten number two again. You're okay, Mr. Wooten. I just want to make sure we know who, when we're addressing people, we know who we're speaking with. So,
I'll figure out.
No, you're okay. Thank you.
So I kind of want to go ahead and touch on the reason why we're here today. As Your Honor mentioned, the charge is battery. And again, I'll just randomly select Mr. Taylor. When you hear the term battery, what is it that you think of?
Physical altercation between two people, or multiple subjects, fighting, slapping, pushing,
So were you saying it's some sort of aggression type of physical contact? Would anyone else agree that that would be their definition of a battery? By show of hands, please. Would anyone have a different type of definition as to what battery may be, or kind of another type of definition encompassing battery? Would anyone agree that since fighting is a sort of form of touching another human being, would anyone agree that that is what can be battery? By show of hands. Okay. Ms. Thompson, did you raise your hand to that question? Could you elaborate more on that?
Well, just fighting in particular, I could see a situation where two drunks were fighting out and were best friends, in which case the police officers would be responsible for taking both parties in. As far as pursuing a lawsuit, I think it would probably be either dismissed or they dropped their own charges. In a situation where there are two people that don't know each other and are representing different factions of a belief, I think the fighting is important to get the police involved.
So let me go ahead and go off on this. It seems that there's a general consensus that battery may involve some type of physical aggressive contact against another human being. But at the same time, some of you did nod or raise your hand that it could involve just a touching of another human being. So in this case, I'll go ahead and select Ms. Abner. So you kind of nodded to both questions of what the definition of battery would be. What type of evidence would you expect to see in a battery case?
Type of evidence, I guess.
Something like, well, yes, what would help you make a decision as to whether or not there was a battery that took place or that didn't take place?
Both individuals' testimony on the subject, if there's any photo evidence or like video evidence. Say if it was a bad enough injury that the hospital and have like medical records.
Alright, so would anyone else agree with Ms. Tavish's response that in order for a case to be proven of battery, there needs to be something concrete presented to you? Raise up hands. Mr. Paulson, you didn't raise your hand to that, but would you agree to that?
Can I request the legal definition of battery?
Let me tell the parties, the jurors. Sometimes this process isn't always the most fair. Attorneys are asking you questions about your knowledge of the law, and I have not yet instructed you on the law. There will be two portions of this trial where I instruct the jury on the law, and it's going to be my instructions as to the law that you have to follow. There will be a portion right before we get into the opening statements and evidence that will have some general instructions, and there will be a secondary portion at the conclusion of the evidence that will have even more regarding the law. And so I'll give you those instructions to those who are on the jury at that time. And I know, Mr. Poplin, that's a non-answer to you. I understand that. Right now, we're simply touching on your qualifications, your knowledge and experience. But I'll answer those questions through formal instructions that I'll have reviewed with both attorneys and the parties and give you those later. My biggest question would be, can you follow the court's instruction as to what a battery may mean if it differs from any opinion you have as to what it should be?
Yes, my hesitancy in answering was that I felt they didn't understand the definition of battery.
Okay. I'll put it another way. I guess I would say you as a potential trier of fact, would you like to see some concrete evidence, or are you able to base your decision solely on the words of whoever would be testifying?
I could base it on testimony.
Would anyone else here be able to base their decision solely on testimony? The witnesses are under oath. But would that be enough for you to make render a decision in favor of either guilty or not guilty? Yes, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, I guess since what we're supposed to be doing, as I understood, is deciding if there's enough evidence to eliminate reasonable doubt or not, then yeah, testimony is enough to decide a verdict, because at the very least what you've done is not eliminate reasonable doubt. So in that case, yeah, I guess technically you can make a decision just off of testimony.
Does anyone else agree with that statement? Yes. Would you like to
elaborate
on that? I agree with that.
Hey, let me just say that was, I'm going through, Mr. Aglebot?
Yes.
Did I say your name correctly?
Aglebot.
Thank you for the correction. Number 21 there.
So has anyone here been involved in some sort of dispute in which they were passionate about a certain topic or subject? Has anyone here witnessed any type of dispute in which someone was passionate about a certain topic or subject? Oh, yes.
January 6th, we all witnessed that.
Right.
And that's Mr. Sloth for our record.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. 20. Number 20. Thank you.
I think that's just an example. So who else here recalls the events of January 6th? Okay. Does anyone here feel like the actions that were taken on that day were appropriate to response of the events that occurred in this country? By show of hands. So on the contrary, perhaps aside from political beliefs or values, when it comes to advocating for other type of rights, social, civil, would anyone agree that there is a certain way that things can be handled? Using January 6th as an example, or does anyone feel like how the events of January 6th were handled, or the action that was taken on January 6th, those can be displayed in any other type of rallies or protests? Does anyone feel that way? That the actions of January 6th, the behavior that occurred on January 6th, were appropriate to be used in any other type of events or proceedings? So is there a consensus then that there's a certain way to behave and advocating for your own beliefs and rights?
Peacefully?
Yeah. Does anyone else agree with that peacefully?
And let me just make mention, I think that was in that number 21, Mr. Aglebot. I'm sorry, I was looking right above that, Mr. number 11, Mr. Poppleton. I was looking right above that to our first in the back row. I have in three rows. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poppleton. So you said peacefully is the way to go about things of that sort. Would anyone else agree with that? By show of hands. Would anyone not agree with that? That perhaps things could be taken further?
Yeah, Mr. Wood. Historically, there have been plenty of peaceful circumstances that got results, and plenty of non-peaceful circumstances that got results. Obviously, peaceful is preferred in 99% of circumstances, but to say it's wholly ineffective is not quite the same.
Someone over here was about to speak.
No. Yeah, can you repeat the question?
That if going about matters and favorable to your viewpoint is is approaching them in a peaceful manner the best way to go about it? Or could there be
a scary thing? Yeah, I think everybody has to, could be convinced of a certain, at a certain point that, that peaceful isn't working. I mean, every war that's ever happened, you know, somebody, maybe I'm going way too far out there, but I feel like people can get, the narrative can get put in their head and they can justify any action.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, that was Mr. Sloth. Yeah. You may have said your name at the beginning, but I missed it. I apologize. Thank you.
So, general consensus kind of that, I guess, peaceful peace is the best way to go about matters such as these. But as you heard from Mr. Sloth, perhaps that's not always the way to achieve a certain objective. Would anyone else agree with that? Ms. Havner,
yeah.
Could you elaborate on that?
I think when it comes to protests and social change, there's a lot of nuance to every protest, and you know, at certain points, the juror in front of me said, there change isn't going to happen unless there's more pressure that peaceful protests can't.
Thank you, Mr. Beltran. Mr. Black.
Thank you, I want to talk about three things with you all today. First one, I think juror number 16 speech earlier, he said something along the lines of, if we're here, it's for a good reason. A couple other people agree with that. I want to dig in a little bit. Juror number one, you haven't spoken too much. What are your thoughts on?
I'm Mrs. Beck. I don't have a lot of thoughts on it. I have a hope that our officers are following the law and upholding what they promised you, just as I hope that us citizens will behave in a way that they hope.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Juror 7.
My name is Esteban Solario. And, in my past, probably 80% of the time I had involvement with the law, it was pretty negative. But as I've gotten older, I found that, you know what, most of it was my fault. So I've come around to the idea, you know what, I thought of it by myself. I've done my payments.
Do you think you're able to, set that aside?
Oh, absolutely.
I guess what I'm really getting at here, is there anyone that's struggling with the idea of innocence today? My fear is that because you see Ms. Hardy sitting next to me, that something must happen. Should I be concerned? Sure, Ms. Ann, what do you think? It's hard though, right? Can you give me any more insight?
That's kind of moment.
Juror number 12, any thoughts?
Very hard to work for me. I'm from Ukraine. It's,
Are you understanding the
moment?
Not very well.
Sir, have you had a little difficulty tracking me then, following me today? I'm going to allow you to be excused today, and thank you for your service. This is juror number 12, Pavel Sima.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you being here. You're welcome to be excused, and you'll need to check in with the jury commission office.
hot seat during number 15. You just made it in. What are your thoughts?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, we were talking about presumption of innocence.
No problem with that.
Okay.
Innocent or person guilty.
Okay. And we'll scale back one towards 14. Second thing I want to talk to you about is a little temper. As you heard from the back row here, this came out of a protest about Roe v. Wade being overturned. You're going to learn today about my client's stance on it. I want to make sure you can set that aside and put that out of your head and decide whether or not she's guilty. So, as you know, as far as the jury panel goes, is there anyone here that is pro-life? If you find out that Ms. Hardy here is protesting the overturning of Roe v. Wade, juror number one, how do you feel about that?
And this is Beth. Yeah, I think that everybody has a right to speak what they believe. I'm okay.
And I just want to make sure you're able to set that aside, deciding whether or not she's guilty or she's charged at.
Yeah.
No issues at all, and just put the tab on that one and shut one out.
I think everybody has a right to say what they believe in.
Okay. Thank you. And then back to juror 15. Thoughts?
Double-edged sword, and I hope if she was on my jury that she would treat me with the same amount of respect and me being innocent until proven guilty.
I appreciate that. Is her political stance on that going to cause you any concern in this at all? Any other person on the panel that I should talk to about their abortion stance? And again, I know this is really tough, on subject to talk about, but I do need to know if anyone is pro-life, so that I can talk to you about it. The third thing I want to talk to you about.
And Mr. Black, someone in the back raised a hand. If you may not have been aware, I just want to let you know.
Ma'am, what's your jury number?
23.
23. And?
I'm pro-life.
Sir, can you speak up just a tiny bit?
I'm pro-life.
Okay. And I just want to make sure if you find out today Ms. Hardy is pro-choice, she was protesting that new Supreme Court decision. Is that going to bother you?
Yes.
Okay.
And honestly.
Okay. And will that, I guess, will that interfere with your ability to decide whether she's guilty or not?
Probably my beliefs.
And I guess what we're asking today is, can you take those beliefs and set them aside and look at this kind of in a sterile box?
Not really.
No. Judge, I'd move to strike.
Thank you. Mr. Beltran, response?
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. And it's, if I have my numbers right, Ms. Holcomb, number 23. Thank you. I'm going to excuse you then in this particular case and grant that request. You'll need to check in and you'll get some directions here with our jury commission office. Thank you.
Let's talk about police.
Okay.
So the state's witness today is a law enforcement officer. This guy is my client, possibly someone else. Does anyone think that they would trust a law enforcement officer's testimony over a non-law enforcement officer? Yes, yeah. I guess the way I like to think about this is, let's say this is a trial for somebody running a stoplight. There's two witnesses right next to the stoplight. They're both sitting there ready to cross. One of them is a police officer. He said it was red. The other one is just a guy named Bill. And Bill said it was red. You tend to believe the police officer over Bill? Anyone?
Yes.
Okay. I see some heads nodding. I see some heads shaking. Juror number two?
I would not.
No. Okay. Do you think they're even Steven?
Granted, my experience has been different, but in my experience, both are equally capable of having their own biases, having their own things that they were focusing on that may or may not have been the exact thing in question. Both of them were equally capable of minor failures of perception.
which kind of all add up to the same circumstance but different outcomes. So, yeah, they're both human. So,
thank you. Juror number five, I saw you nodding. Yes. Can you fill me in on what you think?
Well, police usually have been trained to be observant, so that they're going to see, be more observant of what they see. Is the way I look at it.
That makes sense. What if both of the people tell you 100% they're sure that you're looking right at
them? I go with the police officer.
Is that just because of credibility? You believe them because they're a police officer?
Well, yes, because of their training. Because I've been in places where we've done something where you've asked for two or three different people to say what they saw, and everybody's different. So, you know, I go with who's been trained to be observant.
Okay, thank you. Juror number six.
I'm inclined to agree with her.
Okay.
I have a tendency to go with the trained officer in a situation like that.
I guess for both of you, it's okay. My question is more, if we set training aside and just talk about it as a somebody that you trust because they are a police officer. Do you have any belief that an officer is more inclined to tell the truth than a layperson, or is it just about the training?
I'd say it's mostly about the training.
Okay, two.
Okay. So, juror number five and six, just about the training?
Yes.
Okay. Juror number seven, did you have a reaction? Four? No. Okay. Anybody in the back row have anything they'd like to share? Agree? Disagree? That's true. That's 10.
Exactly.
11. Sorry. Is that just based off the training?
It's based off the
training. Anything additional to that?
A funny story. I apologize if that was late, but I just watched a video my son showed me where people are passing the ball around, and then they say, count how many times the ball was passed around. And in the meantime, there's this guy in a gorilla suit. You never noticed the guy in a gorilla suit. So my belief is, you know, a trained officer would have noticed the guy in the gorilla suit, whereas a new person, that's ready for that.
Thank you. But beyond that training, anything else? Any responses towards the end here?
I agree with jury number two, that we're all infallible, you know, humans, we don't make mistakes. I don't think I would value somebody's testimony over anyone else's.
Okay, thank you.
I think that was number 15 if we didn't say the number. Thank you.
You're number nine.
Yes, I'm sorry. So I know you mentioned like the extraneous details, like gorilla suit or whatever, but in the case, like you mentioned, the stoplight, when you're driving, you're not looking, the stoplight's not like a strange detail. You're looking at the stoplight to see what color it is as you go through the intersection. So I don't know if that's really relevant. In this case, I would measure them both equally. Yeah.
Other feedback in the back row? Sorry if I haven't been too cognizant. I have just a moment. Juror number 14. Did I follow up with you on the abortion question? I did not. Okay. What is your stance on
that? I was going to say, I think you need a little reminder. You said pro life. Do you have an option?
Yeah,
actually, young children.
Thank you, juror number 14. Beyond that, anybody else have anything they'd like to share with me?
Thank you, Mr. Black. So members of the jury, that concludes the questioning of you right now. And I have one question I'm going to ask the attorneys, and then we'll engage in this. Does the state pass the panel, the remaining jurors, for cause?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Black?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is the parties will exercise their right to peremptory challenges in this case. I'll ask the parties as they do this to list by name and by number. And members of the jury, I will tell you this. This is going to be the most awkward portion for you, because what you're going to see is two sets of people staring at you intently and looking at you, writing notes down, discussing. This is part of the process, and that's natural. So they'll be looking at you and passing some paper back and forth. There's a little bit of quiet time that normally happens right now. If you need to stand up, you are welcome to do that. Take a second to stretch your legs. You can talk to each other about anything other than this case or the questions you've been asked. And I know that's a little awkward. The one thing that brings you, that you have in common, you don't get to talk about right now. But if you want to stand up, you're welcome to do that. Just stay in your same spot so the attorneys can see as they look out there. And remember, don't talk about this case. You're not to formulate any opinion as to the merits of the case until it's been submitted to you for your final determination. You're welcome to exchange pleasantries with one another. The one thing I'd caution you is sometimes people might like to talk about the attorneys or the court. We can sometimes hear that. So you might want to talk about anything else other than that or the case itself. But there'll be some, when I'm not filling it with speech right now, there'll be some silent time, and then we'll proceed further. I appreciate your statements though thus far and your participation. We had some good participation. Sometimes jurors come in and it's kind of quiet, and it's always nice when people participate and share their thoughts and feelings. That's really what's supposed to happen, and you had a good, robust discussion with both attorneys, so I thank you for that.
Are you okay with us using our phones now?
Let's not use the phone right now. Yeah, we'll take a break in a while. I'll give you a chance if we can remain off any electronic devices. Yeah, I've given everyone in the courtroom an instruction to do that, and I actually intentionally leave my phone in my chamber so that I won't be tempted to even use it. But we'll take a break for those who are selected and be excusing others in a short while. Thank you for the question, though. And what you'll see is the attorneys are passing these back and forth, and I said staring at you, then it'll be passed up to us. My clerk and I will go through and exchange some notes and then announce who will be on the jury, and we'll need to move people around a little bit when we do that.
We got rid of most of the big warning sign people.
Yeah, quickly. Yeah. I feel like
I don't know. I feel really
If I can have the attorneys meet me outside. Members of the jury, thank you for your patience during that. This is going to be a little bit of an odd manner. What I'm going to ask is that if we can use the back row, those from the back row, if you can come down and sit in this third row over here. And the reason I do that, I'm excusing, is because then I'm going to start calling people back up who will constitute our jury today. So, and we'll seat them in the back row today. So if you can come down and sit right back. Mr. Belchan, you might need to move to the side. Thank you. What I'm going to do is call some names and ask members of the jury the names I call to take a seat, and we'll start in the back on the first one. Ms. Beck, if you'll have the seat right behind you. Ms. Giltner, if you'll have a seat directly to the left, to Ms. Beck's left. Ms. Thompson, if you'll have a seat next to Ms. Giltner. And I mean, Mr. Tulleria, did I say it right that time?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying and I'm not great at that name. You'll have a seat right next to Ms. Thompson. Mr. Poppleton, if I can have you come and have the next seat. Mr. Taylor, if you can come have the next seat. And then Mr. Geetson, did I say your name correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if you'll have the seventh seat there. And Mr. Wooten, while he's doing that, you're welcome to take a seat in back. I don't want to leave you all by yourself right there in that row, which we've done already. Starting with the state, does the state agree that I've properly seated the jury in the back row here?
Yes, Your Honor.
The defense?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. Thank you. Then let me address first those who are in the back. All of you who are not selected as jurors will be excused in just a moment. I want to thank you for your participation today. While you weren't selected as a juror, your participation was important. I noted many of you had responses, and I appreciate that. The parties appreciated that as well. It means a great deal to the court system for you to come in, participate in this way, to give up some of your time today for this. We can't work our system correctly without your participation. So I express my appreciation, my warmest thanks to you. I will note that, and I've said this before, trials like this are open to the public. And so you are welcome, once you're excused and checking with the jury commission, you are welcome to come back and observe or watch, anyone is. Join me back here. I have yet to ever be taken up on that offer, but you are more than welcome to come back and watch. I would simply ask, as I've told everyone else in the audience, please keep your phone silenced if you do that. But you're welcome to come back and sit and see. You may have some interest in it. You may not. If you'd like to be excused, you're welcome to do so otherwise. And so with my appreciation, I'll need you to check in, and the party's appreciation, I'll need you to check in with the jury commission office. And while they're excused, I'll ask everyone to stand while they exit the courtroom.
All right, please.
Thank you. Go ahead and have a seat, everyone.
Okay.
Those of you who remain, you'll constitute our jury for today. And so I want to give you some practical information, and then we're going to take a break and let you stretch your legs, use the facilities, and make any phone calls you need to make. So let me give just a little information to you. As I said, we anticipate this being a one-day trial that will be starting and finishing today. Excuse me. We'll provide lunch for you today. So please be aware of that lunch will be provided. Don't quote me on this. I believe it's going to be Costa Vida. That's what I was told earlier. So there should be some food from them coming today. Generally, we'll take a recess mid-morning. We're going to take it shortly. We'll take another recess during the noon hour lunch hour for you to eat lunch. And we'll take at least another break sometime mid-afternoon. There may be other occasions where we need to take a break for the attorneys and I to talk about any legal issues and resolve things. That happens so we can make the trial move more smoothly. But we'll have at least some guaranteed breaks for you so that you can use facilities, stretch your legs, and take a breather there. Whenever we come back into the jury room here, you're all seated in a particular order. I'm going to ask you to pay attention to the order you're seated in. You'll come back and be seated in the exact same order every time. And that's important for us for a few reasons. One, we can make sure that we have the jury properly constituted, properly seated. I usually ask the attorneys, and you'll hear me say this, starting the state or defense, do you agree the jury's here before us and properly situated? So we'll have those conversations. So just please remember your actual seat and come back there. I've had one juror go missing in the past, and it's a lot easier if we know where you are so we know who's gone missing. So if you can help us with that, I would appreciate it, and our marshals and bailiffs will help us with that too. We'll try to be as punctual as we can for many of our breaks. There may be occasions where I'm having conversations with the attorneys and things spill over. That happened this morning before you came in. We had some matters we needed to discuss and went a little longer than anticipated, or we would have had you in sooner. There may be some other occasions, but we'll try as much as we can to keep things moving at a proper pace. You'll have a jury room you'll be escorted to. In that jury room, there's a restroom for your convenience. There should be some coffee, hot chocolate, different things like that, water. You're welcome to bring something to drink in with you. If you need water or something, feel free to have that. I don't want you to be inconvenienced by thirst such that you can't pay attention. So you're welcome to do that. If you have any special needs, if any of you are having trouble hearing, we do have hearing devices. We can provide those. If any of you need to have special needs, please let our bailiff know, and we'll do our best to meet those to ensure that you have a positive experience while you're sitting as a jury today. There may be some times, especially during deliberations, where our bailiff's instructed to leave your cell phones with them. They'll safeguard them. Please follow their instructions as to that. The one other thing I'm going to go back to, one other thing I'd say is, you may at times see me using the computer up here. Please rest assured I'm not doing any online shopping or anything like that. I may be foreseeing issues that are coming up. I may be doing some research or pulling up a rule of law so that I can be prepared for it. That's what I use. Otherwise, I'll be taking notes or listening to the witnesses. But that's the only reason I'd be using my computer here, to look something up in regards to the law or the trial itself. I gave you one instruction earlier. I'm going to go back and remind you of this. During the course of this trial, including right now, You're instructed not to discuss the case among yourselves or with anyone else, including use of email, text messaging, tweeting, blogging, electronic bulletin boards, or any other form of electronic communication or otherwise. As you can tell, that's probably changed over time. We didn't used to have tweeting or blogging or anything like that, but nowadays we do need to include that. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. You are not to look up this case or to try and do any research on it while you're out in any break. You're not to talk with anyone about the case. If anyone tries to talk to you, tell them you're a juror, that you cannot talk. If anyone persists, simply walk away and notify our bailiff, who will notify me, and I'll rectify that situation. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your final determination. And I'll give some more thorough instructions on that as well. They're important instructions to abide by. It ensures that we have a fair trial in that manner. So having said that, we're going to take a break. What I'd like to do is take about a 20-minute break so everyone can use the facilities. I need to take up a few matters with the attorneys and allow them to use facilities as well. So we'll excuse you. We'll take a 20-minute break and plan to meet back at 11:30. If for any reason we're running longer than that and our conversation's going long, I'll have our marshal or bailiff notify you of that. And as soon as you come back in, we'll swear you in and then give our jury instructions.
All right, please.
Don't come this way.
Go ahead and have a seat. Let me wait for this door to shut before I see me. Okay, it always takes a minute longer for that door to shut than I think. So I want to make sure they're there. So let's take a break. We have a 20-minute break for the jury. What I'd like to do is take a 10-minute break for the attorneys. Is that sufficient time?
Plenty for me.
Okay, Mr. Beltran,
yes,
for you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Hardy, is that enough time for you as well?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. Mr. Black can inform you if you need any help where any facilities are here in the courthouse. Make sure you ask him so that you can use those if you need any as that. We'll meet back in 10 minutes, so at 20 after the hour, and we can take up an anticipated motion I'm hearing from the defense. Thank you. Anything else right now before we go, Mr. Black?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Beltran?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
One State versus Avalon Hardy, and all parties are present again. Mr. Black, we just picked the jury and indicated there would be something you need to take up outside the presence of the jury.
Yes, Judge, we've been making a Batson challenge at this time.
Okay. And you wish to be heard further on that?
Judge, just to shift the burden at first, my understanding, I was just looking over State v. Ish a little bit. I think the first thing I need to do is simply make a Batson challenge. Protect the class, there being sex. I believe the state struck two women off the panel before the first vote.
Thank you, and that's what I wanted to hear, yeah. If you identified the class that you were speaking of right there. Hearing the Batson challenge, I'd want it just a little bit more than that. Okay, so in this particular situation, there has been a Batson challenge raised, a prima facie showing that the two strikes were female based on gender in this particular case. So what I'll do is, Mr. Black, I want to turn to you and perhaps address these one at a time. The first juror being number nine, that being Ms. Tavener. Her original number was 926. The juror number today is number nine, and ask the state for the response in regards to that strike. Mr. Beltran, sorry.
Sorry, Your Honor. Your Honor, that juror was not struck based on her sex/gender. The reason for that juror being stricken was because to a question I had posed on whether matters can be handled peacefully in a protest, she did indicate that perhaps not all the time, just a little bit further than, or a little more than peace would need to be done in order to achieve a certain objective. The state felt that that was not a favorable answer, and which is why she was struck, Your Honor.
And so that's in regards to Ms. Tavener, and if I can hear in regards to number 14, Ms. Morrison. And let me say, is there anything else in regards to Ms. Tavener you wish to be heard on before I move on? Anything else? Or just those comments there?
Yes, Your Honor. Strictly based on her responses.
Okay. Number 14, Ms. Morrison.
Your Honor, the reason why number 14 was struck was because there was not really any interaction with that juror. The state felt like they couldn't get any type of gauge as to her position or anything. So the state just struck her just because, I mean, the state felt received no response or interaction from that juror, Your Honor.
Okay, in response to your questions or Mr. Blatt, are you talking your interaction with her?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Black, would you like to be heard further?
I would, Judge. I think I need to, there's a recent Court of Appeals case, State v. Crosby White, that came back, said that a record was not properly kept. So I think I'd like to go through the state's questioning and lay a record as to
what. And you have the citation to that case.
Judge, it's actually unsighted, but it is 2022 WL, and that's 231-6670.
And I'm familiar with Ish, but I'm not familiar with that most recent case on top of my head.
And Judge, I just think I need to lay a record so that the court can understand our concerns here. My understanding, the state went through three different primary areas of questioning. There was law enforcement contact, battery, and advocacy is the way I'll summarize those three. Of those, going through the panel, juror number one was asked three questions about law enforcement contact. Juror number two, six questions about law enforcement contact, one about advocacy, one about battery. Juror number four was excused. Juror number five was asked four questions about law enforcement contact. Six was one about battery. Seven, no question. Eight, nine, and 10 were excused. Nine was asked two questions about battery and one question about advocacy. Luke Carey, number 10, was asked no questions. Juror number 11, one question about law enforcement, one question about advocacy, two questions about battery. Juror number 12 was not inquired by the state. Juror number 13, state asked two questions about battery. Juror number 14 had no questions asked of them by the state. And juror number 15 had no questions asked of them by the state.
And when you say no questions, you're talking direct interaction one to another rather than questions to the panel as a whole.
Correct, Judge. And so I think my showing here is really trying to explain to the court that the state didn't have any questions for juror number 14, and I did not heard that they had a reason other than the fact that they did not ask her any questions. I think that is a showing that she was excused simply for a Batson reason, a protected class reason. There were no direct questions asked of her. The state also did follow up with, it looks like, number 2 and number 11 the most. Both of those are men. I don't think the state was interacting with the women on the panel to the same extent the men. Miss number 9 only had three questions asked of her. Number 6 only had one question asked of her. So again, Judge, we would stand on our objection at this point in time.
Thank you. And I'll just give you a chance real fast to respond, Mr. Belcher. And I'm going to take a moment to disappear in my chambers. I'm going to read over that case you gave me, Mr. Black, because I'm not as familiar with it off the top of my head. And I'd like to read it. So, Mr. Belcher, any response?
Yes, Your Honor. The state would just state that despite some jurors being men, I mean, a lot of them raised their hand or were willing to just answer. There was no intention as to not interact with any type of juror, Your Honor.
What I'm going to do is take a few minutes, go back and read. I have the citation. Let me make sure I have this correct. 2022 WL 231-6670. Is that correct?
Yes, Judge.
Crosby, is that what you said it was?
Yes.
Okay. Give me a few minutes. I'm going to go take a look at that, and I'll come back in, ask the parties to remain in the courtroom. I'll be in as soon as I'm done with that.
All right.
The court had a few minutes to go out and read the case. And the Crosby White case mentioned by the by Mr. Black, I'm familiar with the Ish case before that, and the Ornelas case from 2014 as well. And typically in a Batson challenge is a three-step process. The first step that occurs in this is the defendant must make a prima facie showing that there's a peremptory challenge that's been exercised on the basis of class. In this case, the court believes that was made, that being based on gender alone. So there's been at least a prima facie there. Second, if that showing has been made, the prosecution must offer a neutral basis for striking the jurors in question. Two particular jurors in this case were struck by the prosecution, and I recognize right now that we're under the emergency order granting only two peremptory strikes per side. The first was number nine that was struck by the state. That was Ms. Amber Tavener, if I'm pronouncing the name right. The reason given from the state was that in relation to questions concerning, maybe I'll use borrow a word from the defense, advocacy or other things, protests, others, other things. And there was extensive conversations about January 6th throughout there, but she indicated that sometimes advocacy, people had a right to be heard, they needed to be able to speak, and that sometimes things could be a little more than peaceful. So that's the reason the state gave in regards to number nine. Number 14, Lindsay Morrison, was the second strike by the state, and the reasons given there were pretty simple, and are simply that there wasn't much interaction, that they didn't have as much interaction with her as they did with the other other jurors. And I think Mr. Black pointed out a number of questions offered directly to jurors. And so those are the basis given by the state in terms of why they exercised the peremptories for those two. So there's been at least some neutral basis given. One, answers to specific questions about advocacy, protesting, having one's voice heard, which seems to relate in some fashion to this particular case. And second, a lack of interaction or connection between the person asking the question and the person answering the question. And so the court does find that there has been at least a neutral basis for striking the two jurors there. The third thing, in light of the questions, the answers, I should say, party submissions, the court has to look at, determine whether the defendant has shown purposeful discrimination. The burden in this case, in this situation, lying with the defendant. I know Mr. Black has given a number of, an analysis, I think, of how many questions were asked of each particular juror on there, focusing primarily that questions were asked mostly of male jurors, I think in particular with number two, Mr. Wooten, and number 11, Mr. Poppleton. The court has to look at a couple different things when it reviews this. The disparate questioning of jurors, and Mr. Black's given an analysis. However, the court will note in this that Mr. Wooten was extremely proactive in answers to questions, of volunteering, even when raising his hand, even when Mr. Beltran was conversing with someone else, coming back to answer a court's question, coming back to answer, and extremely interactive in the process, more so than I think almost any other juror. And so the questions to him and the conversation with him tended to dominate because of how interactive he was. Mr. Poppleton, number 11, also did not shy away from questioning and was very interactive in the process, sharing thoughts, sharing even at one point saying, let me take a little tangent or aside and share a story about a video my son saw with me. And I can't remember if that was with Mr. Beltran or with Mr. Black, but he was very, very interactive in the process there. Ms. Morrison, on the other hand, number 14, from the court's perspective, was what I might refer to as somewhat timid. Her hand barely being raised when it was raised. The court could see it. It was barely above the bench there, not seeming to be as interactive. And many of Mr. Beltran's questions were follow-up or questions to people who were raising their hands bigger. From the court's perspective, Mr. Beltran's questions were primarily to those who were more interactive in the process and more willing to speak, whereas Ms. Morrison was on the quiet side. Even responses she gave today, I all had to strain to hear because of her, what I might say is very light voice today. I have to look at the party's representations of the record while defending the strike, and I've heard Mr. Beltran's statements. I don't find those to be untruthful. I have to look at the party's statistical use of strikes. That's difficult when there's only two strikes. If we had four or six or 10, we'd be in a very different position. When there's only two, it becomes somewhat difficult to look at the statistical use, given it's such a small sample. It also, a challenge like this involves the credibility of the party who made the strikes, that being Mr. Beltran. Two things, his demeanor, his past history of peremptory strikes, and I'll say this, his demeanor is similar to every other case I've tried with him. I think Mr. Beltran and I have probably been in, oh, I'm going off memory, I may get this wrong, three or four different jury trials, and I can't find that in any other, any past case that he is, improperly exercised the use of peremptory strikes. As a matter of fact, in most, I think in every other case with him, I actually made a specific finding that there had not been any evidence of an impermissible strikes, excluding any recognized class. And I think I've done that in every trial I've had with him, there being a reckless driving trial, a DUI trial. I believe he assisted on another one, just going off memory. And so in this particular one, Mr. Beltran's credibility does play a role, and I simply cannot find that there has been a violation of the standard articulated in Batson and then also brought forward in Idaho. Pursuant to that, I do that based on the reasons given by Mr. Beltran, my observations of the jury, their participation, their willingness to be heard, their raising of their hands. I'll note there were other parties that, males that Mr. Beltran did not question. I don't remember any questions. Maybe there was one to Pavel Sima. It turned out later that we found out his English may not have been the best, that being juror number 12. And so I see at least another male in which there was a similar type of interaction as the female here in this case. So I'm denying the motion based on the reasons given. My physical observations of the jury, their participation in this, those who were proactive, those who were not, credibility, Mr. Beltran's credibility that the court finds, court does find to be credible based on my history with him in the past, as well as in this case, noting that in the past when I've asked for things and he has been willing to admit when he's wrong to the court and tell the court when he doesn't have an answer, and his demeanor as well, which I'll notice consistent with every other trial I've had in this case. So I'm denying that, but have noted this for the record, and I think your record is preserved on this. Anything else you'd like to preserve, Mr. Black?
Judge, I do want to add just a couple of things.
Go ahead.
I think under the Crosby-White case, I do need to present a comparative juror analysis. Specifically, when it comes to juror number 14, the state's second strike, and the reasoning for that, again, being that there was no interaction with that person. I don't note that the state had any interaction, just according to my notes, with juror number 10 or juror number 7, both men on the panel. Specifically, juror number 10, we were concerned about his lack of participation, so I followed up with him a few times. He actually almost refused to answer some of the questions I did have for him. Juror number 14 was not that way. I did have two questions of her. She answered them. She was forthcoming. And so my concern there, juror number 10 was somebody that I did strike as my second strike for the same reason the state's saying that they struck number 14, that being that there was no real interaction with that individual. So I guess my concern there is if the state had no interaction with number 10 as well as number 14, and then 10 also gave me, I guess, answers that were not full and seemed to be ducking the questions. If that's the reasoning behind the state, the only difference I see there is a protected difference. And so that being the same for number 7, however, number 7 was more forthcoming with me when I did speak with him. Beyond that, Judge, number 9 and number 2 both had similar answers to the reason why the state was struck. The state struck number 9 as far as peaceful protesting versus being allowed to protest beyond that. I will note for the record, number 2 was my first strike.
Yes, so I've been taken off the board before the state's second strike.
Yes, okay. Judge, which I do understand that that is what it is, but I would note that that is a similar answer to the one that number 9 gave, which is the reason why the state did strike number 9. So that's what I need for my record.
Thank you. Anything else you want to make for your record, Mr. Black?
No, Judge.
Okay. Mr. Beltran, anything else you want to make for purposes of record?
Your Honor, just that, as I had articulated before, there was no striking on the basis of gender, Your Honor.
Thank you. I've denied that request. We're a little later in the day through no fault of anyone than what I was starting. Ms. Avalon, we're Ms. Hardy, I said your first name. I am so sorry. Have I been mispronouncing your first name too?
No.
Okay. Ms. Hardy, we're starting a little late. I will tell you that usually I was going to break for lunch for the jury. Their lunch just got here. And so I have one of two options. I'll allow the parties to respond. I can either bring the jury back in, inform them, have them sworn in, and give them their instructions, which will take a little bit, and then break immediately with the intent to come back, go straight into opening statements. Or I can just give them their lunch and come back in half an hour and start up. Mr. Black, happy to hear from you if you have a preference on that.
Judge, I'll defer.
Okay, Mr. Beltran.
Just submit to the court on that, Your Honor.
Okay. Miss Event, thank you. Let's do this. Let's bring. What I'm going to do is bring the jury back in, have them sworn in, give them their instructions right now so they're not held out longer. I'd like to have them come back in, have a part, then go out. Once we do that, we can take the break, give the party some time for your lunch, for any preparations you need to come back with the intent to go straight into opening statements from the state and if the defense chooses to, or if you want to defer. And then we'll go immediately following those, we'll go straight into testimony. Does that work for the parties?
Wish for the state, Your Honor.
Works for me, Judge. Thank you.
Let's bring the jury back in.
Jury's off, present and counsel, Your Honor.
Thank you. Do the parties stipulate, starting with the state, that the jury is properly present and in the correct order?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense?
We do.
Hey, members of the jury, I'm not going to have you sit down yet. I'm going to have you raise your right hands. We're going to administer an oath to you. Rather than have you sit down and stand back up, we'll do that right now.
Do each of you swear that you will try the matter now pending before the court and render a true verdict according to the evidence, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome to have a seat then. Members of the jury, we had a little longer break than we anticipated. That helped us go through a few things. What I'm going to do now is go through the court's initial instructions with you, give those to you. We have lunch for you. As soon as we're done with this, we'll take a break. Then we'll have that lunch for you. We'll come back in. The parties will proceed with opening it straight into evidence following that. Now that you've been sworn as jurors to try this case, I'll go over with you what will be happening. I'll describe how the trial will be conducted and what we will be doing. At the end of the trial, I'll give you more detailed guidance on how you are to reach your decision. Because the state has the burden of proof, it goes first. After the state's opening statement, the defense may make an opening statement or may wait until the state has presented its case. The state will offer evidence that it says will support the charges against the defendant. The defense may then present evidence, but is not required to do so. If the defense does present evidence, the state may then present rebuttal evidence. This is evidence offered to answer the defense's evidence. After you've heard all the evidence, I'll give you detail, give you additional instructions on the law. After you've heard the argument instructions, the state and defense will each be given time for closing arguments. In their closing arguments, they'll summarize the evidence to help you understand how it relates to the law. Just as the opening statements are not evidence, neither are the closing arguments. After the closing arguments, you will leave the courtroom together to make your decision. During your deliberations, you will have with you my instructions, the exhibits admitted into evidence, and any notes taken by you in court. Under our law and system of justice, the defendant is presumed to be innocent. The presumption of innocence means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the course of the trial. The defendant is never required to prove her innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from the lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. Your duties are to determine the facts, to apply the law set forth in my instructions to those facts, and in this way, to decide the case. In so doing, you must follow my instructions, regardless of your own opinion of what the law is or what the law should be, or what either side may state the law to be. You must consider these instructions as a whole, not picking out one and disregarding others. The order in which the instructions are given has no significance as to their relative importance. The law requires that your decision be made solely upon the evidence before you. Neither sympathy nor prejudice should influence you in your deliberations. Faithful performance by you of these duties is vital to the administration of justice. In determining the facts, you may consider only the evidence admitted in this trial. The evidence consists of the testimony of the witnesses, the exhibits offered and received, and any stipulated or admitted facts. The production of evidence in court is governed by rules of law. At times during the trial, an objection may be made to a question asked to a witness, or to a witness answer, or to an exhibit. This simply means I'm being asked to decide a particular rule of law. Arguments on the admissibility of evidence are designed to aid the court and are not to be considered by you nor affect your deliberations. If I sustain an objection to a question or to an exhibit, the witness may not answer the question or the exhibit may not be considered. Do not attempt to guess what the answer might have been or what the exhibit might have shown. Similarly, if I tell you not to consider a particular statement or exhibit, you should put it out of your mind and not refer to it or rely on it in your later deliberations. During the trial, I may need to talk with the parties about the rules of law which should apply in this case. Sometimes we'll talk here at the bench, sometimes we'll talk over at the side like you saw us doing earlier. Other times I'll excuse you from the courtroom so you can be comfortable while we work out any issues or problems. Do not speculate about any such discussions. They are necessary from time to time and help the trial run more smoothly. Some of you have probably heard the term circumstantial evidence, direct evidence, or hearsay evidence. Do not be concerned with those items. You are to consider all of the evidence admitted in this trial. Having said that, the law does not require you to believe all the evidence. As the sole judges of the facts, you must determine what evidence you believe and what weight you attach to it. There is no magical formula by which one may evaluate testimony. You bring with you to this courtroom all the experience and background of your lives. In your everyday affairs, you determine for yourselves whom you believe, what you believe, and how much weight you attach to what you are told. The same considerations that you use in your everyday dealings in making these decisions are the considerations which you should apply in your deliberations. In deciding what you believe, do not make your decision simply because more witnesses may have testified one way than the other. Your job is to think about the testimony of each witness you heard and decide how much you believe of what he or she had to say. A witness who has special knowledge in a particular matter may give his or her opinion on that matter. In determining the weight to be given such opinion, you should consider the qualifications and the credibility of the witness and the reasons given for his or her opinion. You are not bound by such opinion. Give it the weight, if any, to which you deem it entitled. If during the trial I may say or do anything which suggests to you that I am inclined to favor the claims or position of any party, you will not permit yourself to be influenced by any such suggestion. I will not express, nor intend to express, nor will I intend to intimate any opinion as to which witnesses are or are not worthy of belief, what facts are or are not established, or what inferences should be drawn from the evidence. If any expression of mine seems to indicate an opinion relating to any of these matters, I instruct you to disregard it. Do not concern yourself with the subject of penalty or punishment. That subject must not in any way affect your verdict. If you find the defendant guilty, it will be my duty to determine the appropriate penalty or punishment. If you wish, you may take notes to help you remember what witnesses said. If you do take notes, please keep them to yourself until you and your fellow jurors go to the jury room to decide the case. You should not let note-taking distract you so that you do not hear other answers by witnesses. When you leave at night, please leave your notes in the jury room, and those will be disposed of by our bailiffs. If you do not take notes, you should rely on your own memory of what was said and not be overly influenced by the notes of other jurors. In addition, you cannot assign to one person the duty of taking notes for all of you. It's important that as jurors and officers of this court, you obey the following instruction anytime you leave the jury box, whether for recesses during the day or if you were to leave the courtroom at home to go to, if the case was still pending and you left this evening while the case was still ongoing. Do not discuss the case during the trial with anyone, including any of the attorneys, parties, witnesses, your friends, or members of your family. No discussion, as I've said before, also means no emailing, text messaging, tweeting, blogging, posting to electronic bulletin boards, or any other form of communication, social media, electronic, or otherwise. Do not discuss this case with the other jurors until you begin your deliberations at the end of the trial. Do not attempt to decide the case until you begin your deliberations. I'll give you some form of this instruction every time we take a break. I don't do this to insult you or because I think you're not paying attention. Experience has shown that this is one of the hardest instructions for jurors to follow. There's really no other situation that I'm aware of in which we, in our culture, where we ask strangers who don't know each other to come sit together, watch and listen to something, then go in a little room together and not talk about the only thing they have in common, what they just watched together. But there are two reasons for this rule. The first is to help you keep an open mind. When you talk about things, you start to make decisions about them, and it's extremely important that you not make any decisions about this case until you've heard all the evidence and all the rules for making your decisions, and you won't have that until the very end of the trial. The second reason for this rule is that we want all of you working together on this decision when you deliberate. If you have conversations in groups of two or three during the trial, you won't remember to repeat all of your thoughts and observations for the rest of your fellow jurors when you deliberate at the end of the trial. Ignore any attempted improper communication. If any person tries to talk to you about this case, tell that person that you cannot discuss the case because you are a juror. If that person persists, simply walk away and report the incident to the bailiff. Do not make any independent personal investigations into any facts or locations connected with this case. Do not look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not communicate any private or special knowledge about any facts of this case to your fellow jurors. Do not read or listen to any news reports about this case or about anyone involved in this case, whether those reports are in the newspapers or on the internet or on radio or television. In our daily lives, we're used to looking at information up online and to Google something as a matter of course or routine. In trial, it can be very tempting for jurors to try and do their own research to make sure that you're making the correct decision. You must resist that temptation for our system of justice to work as it should. I specifically instruct that you must decide this case only on the evidence you receive here in court today. If you communicate with anyone about the case or you do any outside research during the trial, including looking anything up, trying to find any reference to this in any type of media, it could cause us to have to start the trial over with new jurors, and you could be held in contempt of court. While you're actually deliberating in the jury room, the bailiff will confiscate all cell phones and other means of electronic communications. Should you need to communicate with me or anyone else during the deliberations, you can notify the bailiff, and they'll alert me to that. Those constitute the court's initial instructions to you, the jury. We're going to take a break right now so you can have lunch. When we come back, I anticipate we'll go straight into our evidence, or our opening statements, and then into evidence. What I'd like to do is take a 30-minute break to give the jury sufficient time, stretch their legs, eat lunch, use facilities, and make any additional phone calls they need to make. Will that be sufficient time for the state?
It will be, Your Honor.
Mr. Black?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. What I'll do is have the parties back here at 12:40. With an anticipation, we'll have a brief conversation before we invite the jury in. We'll try to have you in within 5 minutes of that, if we can do that, and then we'll start up with our opening statements.
All right, please.
01, all parties present. Anything that the state needs to take up before we invite the jury back in for opening statements?
Nothing, Your Honor, just that the witness who is a victim be allowed to sit in on the trial after testifying if he so wishes, considering the fact that he is a victim in this case. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Black? You almost did what I've done before. So, and unfortunately, those Kleenexes aren't the best absorbency things for water.
They'll work. I don't have any objection, Judge.
Okay. I'll rule that he can, if all his testimony remain in pursuant to his rights as a crime victim under the Idaho State Constitution and the Crime Victims Act. Other witnesses have been excluded from being here during testimony. I remember your witness was here. I don't see him here, so he may be out in the hall. Is he close by in case he's needed for your testifying?
He was outside.
Okay. Yeah, I saw him over the lunch. Okay.
If we need to get to that point, we'll take a break, too, so we can I'm not going to say, oh, time to go. He's not here, too bad. We'll see what we can do for him.
Yeah, he's hanging around.
So. Okay, perfect then. Anything else the defense needs to take up before we start then?
Nothing, Judge.
Okay. We'll bring the jury in. Mr. Black, I know you don't have to tell me, you might tell me in 5 or 10 minutes, but do you intend to give an opening now or defer?
No.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Let's bring the jury back in. I'll just a reminder to everyone here, if you can keep any phones silenced so we don't have any interruptions. I don't want anything to defer from Ms. Hardy's trial or from the state's presentation. And I'll tell you, Tim, I've learned a lesson the hard way to keep my phone there because I had it go off one time. I never thought it would, so I just don't even bring it anymore.
Your Honor, so since I'm pretty sure the court is aware of this, since the state doesn't tend to use a media that to get the projector down and that sort.
Yes, so it looks like the projector screen's down and ready to go. When you need it, notify us.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now I don't have any issues with that. Before I can see we're ready to it.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And I did tell people in the past that stay on this side when you're selecting jury. You're welcome to spread out wherever you want or stay on this side, wherever you're most comfortable. So.
Yes, please. I won't play the clip now. I just want to see if it's going to project.
You want me to tell the jury to wait 1 second before coming in while you're doing this?
Sure. Yes,
they should be bringing me in right now. So I'm
Judge.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Please hold on with the jury.
1 second.
Yeah. Okay. That should be fine then. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure we don't have anything up there improper that we could read that says something on your screen or desktop there.
What's my desktop? I mean, I just have documents that are labeled.
I didn't see anything off the top. Did you see anything?
I got that outside, Judge.
It looked blurry a little bit to me anyways. I just want to make sure we don't have something up there that says so-and-so is this or, you know, something that the jury shouldn't see. And perhaps even if you had the video ready to play, so it's just a matter of plug in.
Yes.
That might be the best method.
Well, I will have
when it's time to do it.
I would have to pass it to the witness first, Your Honor.
When you get it back.
Okay.
And something like that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ready for the, Mr. Beltran, tell me when you're ready and we'll get the jury called in.
I'm ready, Your Honor.
Okay. Just bring it in. Thank you.
All right, please.